Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us every day from 11 to noon here at restaurantguysradio.com, or you can also listen to us at iTunes.
That's right. You can podcast our show, and many people are podcasting our show all around the world, and we thank you for listening, and we're absolutely shocked. We get like 10,000 people a week downloading these shows.
It's fun. 10,000. It's a lot of fun.
What's wrong with you people? Don't you have anything better to do?
So Francis,
plus the people who listen in our listening area here in Central Jersey and sometimes out in Staten Island and up into New York City. We actually have been getting a lot of emails from you all over the world, and we like to answer them, especially when you guys have interesting questions. No shot on the rest of you who
are
getting
answered
today.
Should I start Michael Vick or Donovan McNabb on my fantasy football? No,
that's not one of ours. Yeah.
that's not ours.
That's the other radio show you do. Actually, I have an email here from a gentleman named Kelvin Roth, a very nice email. He says, I live in Chicago, but I never miss a show. I went back and downloaded the old shows and listened to them, and he really likes us. I want to let you know that your shows bring together a community. My wife and I always enjoy your shows and love discussing them. We've turned on several friends from Chicago to California to Brussels to your show, and now we all discuss them. So your show is bringing people together. Gosh, Kelvin, you're going to make me cry. But he has as a question as well. I've listened to your show on foie gras and must admit I love foie gras. And I read much of the information out there. You're a big supporter of food being grown, raised naturally. And while I understand that the fattening of the liver of a duck is a natural process and doesn't hurt the animal, I do have a couple of questions that I'm hoping you can answer. Is there any foie gras that is obtained naturally, that's harvested from animals right before they migrate, rather than being created artificially? Also based on the natural process, shouldn't this be a seasonal item? Okay, here's the deal. We did our show on foie gras just recently, and we talked about what foie gras is. It's from a duck in this country, from a goose in France, but from a duck or a goose. Let's just short-circuit it there. And they hand-feed that duck. And what happens with the duck is its liver gets very fat and engorged. Mm-hmm. And then when we kill that duck for food, that liver is a foie gras liver, or foie de canard liver. Now, we talked a lot on the show about, there are a lot of animal rights people sort of focus on the foie gras issue and are very much against it. The irony of all that is that, your McDonald's chicken is treated a heck of a lot worse than
exactly.
Your foie gras duck, which leads to life of Riley and gets fat because
you never
happy.
You never debeak your foie gras duck.
Gras duck
for
foie
instance.
Gras ducks live on a farm, usually open air, in a pen of about 8 to 12 ducks. But in any event, the way that where foie gras came about is that ducks naturally, before migration, engorge themselves for this long flight, and mm-hmm. ducks have no gag reflex, and they just eat. And what happens is a farmer who raises ducks for foie gras will take advantage of that and hand feed, what animal rights advocates call force feed, but in the 21st century we need to take command of the language. They hand feed these ducks by, putting a feeding tube in and sort of tapping down the ducks. If you've ever seen it happen, the ducks waddle up to the feeder as soon as he comes out and they really like it. I actually would like to have it done to me occasionally if the food is good. But the question is,
Kelvin, I'm angry at you for sending this question to Francis.
The question is, can you just, find a duck as it's about to fly off and migrate? My answer is, if you have a shotgun, you can, but
if you're really, really lucky is the answer.
And you live in Canada and you own a shotgun and you have a hunting license, you can do that. The problem is that when you raise ducks for foie gras, they're in captivity, of mm-hmm. course. And the only way to get them to get into that pre-migratory pattern is to let them go. But then if you let them go, you've let them go.
They aren't there anymore.
So, grab a shotgun or have to buy it from D'Artagnan. And that's my story. All right, in the news a couple of Sundays ago, I've read about this new movement called cook dating, which I have found it's happening in Paris. And Frédéric Chesneau, the founder of L'Atelier Fred, a cooking school in the Marais in France, when he noticed how well his students seemed to click, made Thursday nights a singles-only class. That's a cooking class. You can sign up, if you're in France, at www.cook-dating.com. And what happens is during the lesson, he directs people, you know, that he thinks are getting along. He says, you know, why don't you and Jean-Luc grate the ginger together, Harry?
Okay, Francis, I got to tell you why this is an epically bad idea.
I love the idea.
Okay, why it's epically
bad. Why?
Because I can't even cook in the kitchen with my wife. Okay, she gets in the kitchen, and I get in the kitchen, I'm like, just go do something else. Go do something else, because I'm cooking, and you're in my way, and... Hold on.
You're an overbearing Italian guy, and your wife is a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant from the Midwest.
I'm a little bit of a control freak in
especially
the kitchen.
Especially in
I have
the
to
kitchen, admit. And I love you, Jen, but let Mark be the control freak in the kitchen.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What kind of success are they having?
They have, and I love this. This is great. He estimates the success rate in his own class. What he says is, by the time you sit down to your canard au jujembe, there might be more food. There might be more chemistry. That might be more than food chemistry at work. The success rate, he reports, is 7%. But I am not going to pry. My job is done when I leave the class.
So a whopping 7%, huh?
Hey man, that's not bad. 7%. You've been married too long.
People shouldn't cook together. That's not a good way to get together.
I totally
One
disagree.
Person should cook. They should bring it out lovingly to the other person. That's the way that it should be done. This
you
is the whole.
You are so stuck in the 70s.
No, I'm not stuck in the 70s. I'm cooking. She's cooking. We're cooking. We're just not cooking together.
No, I like it. All right. A little more came out in the St. Louis Business Journal. You heard us mocking recently the Budweiser's recent product B to the E. B to the E is the fruit-flavored awful beer beverage that they came out with that combines like ginseng.
Beverage that has nothing to do with beer except for the alcohol.
It's a caffeinated fruit-flavored beer with all sorts of natural herbs in it. You either want a Bud or you want something good for you. You don't want both at the same time. But what they're trying to do is they're finding that their market here is lagging, which, while oddly, it's increasing in Ireland, where I come from, or where my family come from. I come from New Jersey.
No comment.
But it's crazy. The people over there have all this great beer, and the young people out are not drinking Guinness anymore. They're drinking Budweiser. And you want to shake them and say, are you kidding me? This is what you're going to take from my country? All right. Anheuser-Busch continues to lob ideas for new products into the market in its efforts to compete with the growing spirits industry, to boot and boost its lagging market share and attract the younger Pepsi generation. They have a dozen new products on the hopper. Wild Blue, a blueberry-favored beer. Bluestone, a still drink made with grain, blueberries, and red grapes. And Blue Horizon, a blueberry-flavored malt beverage. And that comes after their summer launch of Tilt, a caffeinated malt beverage with guarana and ginseng. And that follows, of course, last spring's launch of B to the E.
Caffeinated beer seems like maybe the worst idea of all time.
That is just have a beer. I mean, you know, you have a mediocre beer that everybody knows what it is. Drink it cold. It's fine.
Yeah. You know what? Why you when you get really drunk, you fall asleep?
Why?
Because you're supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Can you imagine what this does to society? Oh, we want to keep the drunks awake. No, let them fall asleep. Well, and the other thing is, look, you know, I have an idea for Anheuser-Busch. Why don't they make something really good? Okay, the blueberry beer, I'm sure ain't it. Because you know what? I bet it's not even natural blueberries. You know they're not using the blueberries.
They haven't contracted all the people in Hamilton.
Hey, listen, we have a guest coming on the show in the next segment. Scott Conant is the chef at L'Impero and also Alto in Manhattan. And he's one of, I think, the most important chefs and has opened one of the most important restaurants in New York City and one of the most important Italian-American restaurants in the country.
Very pleased to have him with us today.
And he's going to be talking with us about Italian food in general and about his new restaurants and about the swirling controversy about his latest venture. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we have with us award-winning chef Scott Conant. Scott is a chef owner of L'Impero and Alto. L'Impero was honored with the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in the Country in 2003. In spring of 2005, Scott opened Alto, which focuses on the cuisine of northern Italy, and he was also named one of the 10 best new chefs in the country in 2004 by Food & Wine magazine. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We're very happy to have you here today.
Thanks.
Thank you. That's nice.
It's great that you took the time. I think that Mark and I don't know if you realize that we had dinner at your most recent restaurant, Alto.
Yeah.
Just recently, and
I was away. I wasn't there, so I apologize for not coming out.
Oh, I don't think the owner has. I wasn't insulted at all. What you did make sure was that we got some amazing food and wine and service, and that was really
that is your job.
Yeah. I'm glad you had a good experience.
That was great.
You blew us away, man. That was Alto is a pretty different Italian restaurant. You have a mission there with Alto, don't you?
Well, you know, I've been cooking since I was 15. So, you know, when I started, I was into kind of fancified French, just like every other kid. You know what I mean? When you first start cooking.
You didn't grow up in my neighborhood, Scott.
I've been cooking since 15, too, Scott. It was toast and eggs.
I grew up in Waterbury, Connecticut.
Oh.
You know, we can compare notes if you want.
Grilled cheese was fancy around my neighborhood. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about. As any young aspiring chef, you look to the fancy French food as the ultimate goal.
Yeah, you look to, I was 15, I knew Escoffier back to front. I knew La Russe Gastronomique. Like, you know, it's still sitting on my shelf in front of me. So, you know, those were that, like I said, that fantasified food that I wanted to do. You know, as you kind of grow and evolve and you start to, you know, acquire knowledge and you start to develop your own philosophy. You know, my grandparents are from Benevento in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this style and simplicity of Italian food I really loved. But, you know, I knew that I couldn't do, I had no interest from an artistic level of what I grew up with. So I wanted to create my own thing. So when I was 19, I started working at San Domenico on Central Park South, which at the time was, talk about a trailblazer. Tony
yeah, it was
May
the place.
Was crazy, you know?
And what way did he blaze a trail back then?
Well, he really brought that Alta Cucina to the forefront. I mean, nobody had seen a restaurant like that at the time. It was Palio and it was San Domenico, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was, you know, what... That was the same time that Tuscan food started really getting its momentum.
Scott, I think that one of the things that is the kind of the controversy out there, I think there's a lot of people out there who feel that Italian cuisine can't be, you know, high cuisine, can't be the top of the top. What's your answer to that?
Well, I would say you need to understand the country in general. I think so many people get kind of bogged down in the regional identity of the cuisine, and that's I think that's what kind of separates me from a lot of other chefs. That I don't use one region as an example. I kind of draw off the country as a whole, which is really uncommon. Not a lot of people do that. It's only been over the past 150 years that Italy's been a unified country.
Right.
So it's still trying to figure out its way. I mean, you know, it only recently has really kind of developed, you know, that singular language where people are all speaking Italian now as opposed to just their dialect.
Right.
So, you know, the two schools of thought with Italian food are Alta Cucina and Cucina Rustica, which is the high-end kitchen and the rustic kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, when you go to Michelin-starred restaurants in Italy, a lot of people complain that that's not the type of food they want to eat. However, it is Italian food.
Well, you know, it's funny. What I think, and I read the reviews of your restaurant, and you got some excellent reviews, and you even got some, but you've got some reviews where they said excellent things, and I think accurately reported on some of the great stuff that's really going on in your dining room, having been there myself. But they seem really catty.
Yeah, like actually, Anthony Giglio, who we had on the show, who is the reviewer for the New York Sun, described, I believe it was Frank Bruni's review, as bitchy was the word he used.
Well, I'm not going to say that.
Well, no, I wouldn't either. But
I'm not saying it either. But I'm quoting Anthony.
I appreciate you saying
that. But I'm outside his jurisdiction. So no, I mean, what was interesting about a lot of the ways people are writing about Alto, which seeks to be, you know, truly fine dining and Italian at the same time, I think that people are sort of pissed at you for doing that,
right.
And I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't understand.
You know, I agree with you 100%. I don't understand why.
Well, they'll say stuff like, we went to the Italian restaurant and he had all these fabulous things and they were wonderful and waiters everywhere and everything was beautiful. The pig. You know, I mean, I don't get it. I can't, I mean, internally.
How dare the waiter be waiting there for me to order something?
You know, it
cracks me up because it's been, me and my business partner, Chris, we and my partners, Jane Epstein and Vincent Wolf, we opened up Limpetto. It was 3 years ago. We had a third anniversary. And, you know, I love that restaurant. It resonates with so many people, and I couldn't be happier than, you know, with the success of that place. I mean, we've really gotten a lot of awards and all the kind of, all the things we've achieved that you don't set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
You just want a successful restaurant.
Sure.
And thank God it's all gelled and it's solidified nicely. With Alto, you know, I'm an ambitious guy. I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a little bit restless. So, you know, the basic confines of that kitchen couldn't hold the ideas, and I
right.
really wanted to grow and evolve. And that's what Alto became. It really resonates with a lot of people as well. I mean, that's a crazy thing. Is we had a review in the New York Observer that Moira Hodgson wrote that was stellar.
Yeah, you've gotten some great reviews.
Yeah.
It seemed like these first two reviews that you got were kind of bashing the idea that Italian cuisine could be anything other than
yeah.
kind of rustic. And then all of a sudden, it seems like people are catching on, and some of the other reviewers are
I don't
saying,
know. I don't
no,
know.
That's not
I
true.
I think that people have preconceived notions, and it looks to me like the reviews that I think people's preconceived notions come out in their reviews more than anything.
I agree with you 100% on that.
I mean, internally, some of these reviews talk about, Anthony Giglio has used the term, you know, it's almost sort of racist in a way. I mean,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, but
I'm not going to play that card.
No.
Really, he really went off, by the way. I don't know if you heard that show, but.
I did hear that show. He was great. He's my hero.
yeah, he wears a cape and everything. No, but. I don't understand. And, you know, Frank Bruni's, of course, Italian-American, who's the New York Times restaurant reviewer.
As well, that, you know, I mean, not with Frank Bruni, but with people who grow up eating, you know, Brooklyn-style, eating the food
mm-hmm.
that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I'm no different than anybody. However, I think that, you know, it's time to move on.
Well,
right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's the basic thing. If I have one more veal chop the size of my leg with...
Right.
That's roasted with so much rosemary that it's bitter.
Yeah,
and people call it Tuscan food. I'm gonna right. cut my own throat.
I was just about to say. I feel that food's been moving backwards. The rustic Italian food.
Well, we'll
talk about that more.
Yeah, you know, they say that you know, any immigrant cuisine like Italian American cuisine. You know, Italian American cuisine is sort of a snapshot of what Italian cuisine was whenever your great-grandmother emigrated, and it just gets worse with the passage of time because, you know, you do that less and less well and you don't innovate. We're talking with Scott Conant. He's the chef and owner of L'Impero and Alto in New York City, and he has a very controversial Italian restaurant, and he's also an author and a very, very interesting guy, and we'll be talking with him in more in just a moment about Italian cuisine versus Italian-American cuisine. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest today is Scott Conant. Scott is the chef owner of L'Impero and Alto, two Italian restaurants in Manhattan. And Alto may be the finest Italian restaurant in Manhattan, and certainly Alto... sort of having two meetings referring to the cuisine of Alto Adige, which is in the north of Italy, and also, like, haute cuisine in French means the high cuisine, Alto means sort of high cuisine. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
We were talking about low cuisine a minute ago. we were verging on lowest of the low cuisine a minute ago. We're talking about fake Italian-American food.
Yeah, I always loved it, and I want you to talk a little bit about northern Italian cuisine, because in the United States here, well, certainly in the New Jersey, New York area, we talk about northern Italian cuisine, and really how northern Italian cuisine came about in this marketplace was people who owned Italian restaurants or Italian-American restaurants were mad because people were spending more in the French restaurants. So they started making things and said, I will make veal chop with mushrooms and porcini cream sauce, and it will be the greatest
and northern food, Italian.
Northern Italian dish.
Northern Italian. Well, basically, I've always thought that those northern Italian restaurants are just southern Italian menus. What, you know, with a tablecloth on it.
Yeah.
No, actually, what I find they are is it's just totally made up food.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. The northern Italian lobster dumplings and the cognac cream sauce.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
what part of Italy does that? What part of northern Italy were you in?
I've never been there. I hope I never go.
Crab cakes with pineapple sage risotto.
Oh, Lord.
Sorry.
You know, now that's not to disparage. I think, though, and I want to flesh this out a little bit more. I mean, don't you think there's a place for really well-made Italian-American cuisine, you know, a la Brooklyn 19... Well, 58?
You know, you have to say yes because we're opening a restaurant like that in about 3 weeks.
If you guys need a consultant, let me know. this is the way I think about it. I think one of the problems with Italian American food is that it's heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's not a lot of cooks who understand restraint when it comes to Italian food,
mm-hmm.
and that's been my goal. That's been my kind of trying to fill that void. People throw too much pepperoncino, too much crushed red pepper on a dish, mm-hmm. too many herbs, too many whatever, and they stick an Italian flag in it and blame it on Italy.
If it's worth if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing, you know?
Yeah, well, that's my... it's so unfortunate.
You know, it's funny. It's a traditional Italian dish. I don't remember the frozen ravioli.
When we come back, I want to talk about maybe the best pasta dish I've ever had in my life, which I had at your restaurant.
I guess you made it. Yeah, it was you.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guy, Central Jersey, 14:50. Time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott here with Mark Pascal. Together we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every weekday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can also reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, where you can find out how to receive our podcast and have our show sent to your computer every time we put one up on the web. Today our guest is Scott Conant. Scott is owner, chef of L'Impero in New York City and the new Alto restaurant in New York City, which may be the finest Italian restaurant in New York. Hey, Scott.
Hey.
We were talking before the break about Italian-American cuisine and how that sort of goes awry. Now, you know, I read a lot of books. When I was in college, I studied urban politics, and we talked a lot about immigration, and we talked about how an immigrant community sort of forms its own community and its own mores that is separate from the country that it comes from. And often the members of that community don't realize that, you know, Irish-American is different than Irish. Italian-American is different than Italian.
Well, it's a fork in the road is what it is. It's a fork in the road where the two cultures diversify.
And very often, you know, images of, you know, Ireland are of, you know, barefoot girls in, you know, mud-thatched roofed huts, you know, because that's what my great-grandmother left. And
sounds like a good time.
You're a twisted man.
I'm going to go tomorrow.
I like the way you think.
So I kind of like it, too, to be honest with you. But sadly, you know, now it's a very cosmopolitan place. Now, you know, in a cuisine like in a culture like Italian culture, where food is very important to the culture, it's interesting that it's sort of when people look to the best Italian-American food, we're always looking back. We're always looking mm-hmm. back to, you know, your great-grandmother, because that was the snapshot of what Italian cuisine was back then. Whereas in Italy, they kept going, you know?
Well, to a certain extent, they kept going. But, you know, my motivation with cooking and trying to do things on my terms is always, you know, along a certain, you know, it's like a little catchphrase that I tell the guys. If they want to, you know, kind of create new dishes and present something to me, you know, my staff, whatever it is, you know, there's three little words that I try to tell them that I think it's important to understand the emotion behind Italian food at the same time. And it's, you know, the honesty of the cuisine, the integrity of the cuisine, and the soulfulness of the product and the extraction of flavor. So, you know, those are the kind of the catchphrases that I try to live by. So, you know, taking those into consideration, there's a lot of emotion invested in all things Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, my mother's Italian. I know. You know, there's a lot
of
emotion there.
I get it.
So, I mean, the point is it's about goodness. And even though it's a little bit refined and it's, you know, the lines are a little cleaner and it's not so heavy-handed and all those things, at the end of the day, it's meant to just, you're just meant to enjoy it.
Now,
you know, dinner.
Now, when you have a contemporary Italian restaurant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you source ingredients locally. And, you know, cuisine, time marches on, things move forward. When you open an Italian restaurant in New York, and it's a contemporary Italian restaurant, it's not recipe-based. It's not based on the recipes of your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves forward. What maintains its identity as an Italian restaurant?
Well, it's a lot of the Italian ingredients that, you know, first and foremost, I want to say that the restaurants are in New York City. So,
right.
I don't pretend that this is the type of food or the range of product that you're going to get in Italy.
Right.
Also,
mm-hmm.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. We've all been to Italy. We understand that, you know, you have four appetizers, four pastas, four main courses, And that's pretty much it. There's not a lot of range on those menus.
Right.
Which I wish I could do a menu like that.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it's impossible from a business standpoint.
Yeah. Scott, you're in New York. I just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah, that's a pretty good place to be as far as range of ingredients.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's great ingredients here. There's amazing product. And, the point is that you have to appeal to a New York clientele, which is very discerning, let's say.
Right.
I'm not going to kid myself and say that I have an Italian restaurant. I mean, it's an Italian restaurant in New York City, and that's, it's a New York restaurant.
Right.
So.
Well, I think it's a New York restaurant, and it's based in real Italian cooking and a real fundamental knowledge of what's going on in Italy. I think what was interesting is I read you were in Art Culinaire in the fall of 2004.
Yeah. That's funny.
And I have this quote.
Funny article.
They got me after like six espressos.
Very funny article. You are definitely wired for this.
Here's a quote from you. I'm going to read you your own quote. You ready? In this country, people associate Italian food with a grandmother from Italy who has the kerchief on her head and makes the meatballs. If one more blankety blank city restaurant opens a restaurant with meatballs on the menu, I don't know what the blank a meatball is. It's killing me, man. You did have a couple of espressos that day.
I had a few, yeah.
And I have one question for you. Mark, did your grandmother wear a kerchief?
My grandmother a kerchief wouldn't have fit on her, okay? So there you go. But meatballs are American. That's just one of the things people don't realize.
Yeah.
It was the American adaptation of Italian food.
Absolutely.
Well, and in the high and the low, I think people are willing to accept, like you said, when people go to Italy and they have food in the home and they have food in a casual trattoria, they accept that as Italian food. But if they go to a really nice Michelin, starred restaurant, they say, oh, well, that's not real Italian food.
That's true Italian food, yeah.
Well,
right.
But hold on a second. In France, I've been to 3-star restaurants in France, and I've been to people's houses in France, and I've been to little bistros in France.
Mm-hmm.
It's different food there, too.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not truly French food. It's high French food. Mm-hmm. Why can't Italian food have the same?
I agree. I agree with you 100%. You're preaching to the choir.
But at the same time, though.
We're also preaching to 10,000 other people, though, Scott.
Yeah,
well,
Francis, there is a culture, and we've talked about this before on the show. There is a culture for the French person who eats at home as opposed to the American person that eats at home that's different. When for each person, so that French culture, that person is going out and doing ingredient based food at home, where in the United States we're doing meal based food at home, as close to being complete as we can be, whereas that's not the culture in France still to the today.
Yeah,
Scott, I want to ask you about one dish that we had when we were at your place. We had, and this is not country cuisine by any stretch of the measure, there was an agnolotti with a Parmesan foam.
Man, yeah. That was so freaking good.
Still thinking about that, man.
Okay.
What's that all about? Can you tell us how you did that?
Well, in a clean or an agnolotti is from, kind of in Piedmont. So the thing was, I just wanted to get something really deep and soulful on the plate. That's a combination of veal, pork, and chicken,
which
all braised together.
Which are almost the ingredients of a meatball, I just thought I'd point that out.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Email me your recipe. I'll do anything to keep this restaurant in business.
Talk to me about how now agnolotti is a triangle shaped pasta, and it was stuffed with this mixture. So we see how it's it's a classic meat combination.
Yeah.
The pasta was ethereally light, which is a classic goal of Italian pasta cooking. But how does a foam and a Parmesan foam wind up on there?
Well, I'm thinking outside the box. I mean, the food is in no way, Ferran Adria style of food. I mean,
right.
I'm not, that's not my...
Ferran Adria is kind of the father of this chemistry cooking...
Right.
On the edge.
Edge.
Yes, yeah.
On the cookie edge.
It's not this kind of nouveau type of thing. I feel, and this is the analogy that I use with people all the time, foams and froths and all this stuff, it's like hip-hop back in the 80s. You know,
uh-huh.
It's not going anyplace.
Right.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh.
But you have a foam on your menu.
I have.
You're wrapping right on your menu, right there.
That's right. There's a Parmesan foam. It's right there. It's not going anyplace. And people love the dish. You know, if they get past the idea that, oh, my God, Italians don't do foam. There's a restaurant called La Calandre in Emilia-Romagna that's 3 stars Michelin, and he's doing kind of this very, like, a lot of chemistry-style food. But, it's still kind of entrenched in that soulful aspect of Italian cuisine.
Well, Scott, I'm going to tell you that I thought I was done with foams until I had it on that dish, and it blew me away.
It was not fussy at all.
Blew me away.
It was really, really amazing.
Yeah, it's not meant to be fussy.
Our guest today is Scott Conan. He's the chef owner of L'Impero and Alto restaurants in New York City, and he's really on the cutting edge of Italian cuisine in the United States. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to him, and we're going to ask him if we can put one of his recipes up on the website for a simple white bean and escarole soup that had appeared on a website that I really, really like. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today our guest is Scott Conant. Scott is the chef owner of L'Impero restaurant in Manhattan as well as Alto restaurant in Manhattan. And he's also written a great cookbook, and the cookbook is Scott Conant's New Italian Cooking. Scott, will you talk to us about this book? It's pretty cool.
It's great. I just actually got my first hardcover copy yesterday from my publisher.
Awesome. And that's got to feel good, huh?
Yeah, I'll tell you. It's like a little bit emotional. It's fantastic.
Oh, Scott.
We have a no crying show, please.
I'm a wimp.
My goodness.
It's fantastic. It's really exciting. There's a lot of the recipes that I've done at L'Impero over the years that I've done in different restaurants that I've worked at, and some of the you know, some of the things that I'm doing at Alto, but also a lot of dishes that you can do at home with the same, you know, that same depth of flavor.
You know what's
in under 30 minutes.
Now, this book comes out October 25th?
Yes, sir.
October 25th.
You know what's interesting? I've read the abstracts from the book, and I haven't gotten the free copy you're going to send us, but I'm sure it's in the mail.
Begging for one free book?
It's funny on the air. Come on. But maybe we'll come back and do another show on the book. But what's interesting is you talk a lot about, or in the abstract, your publisher talks a lot about using methods like roasting that may take slow roasting and braising that may take time, but actually really aren't that hard to do. And I think that what's interesting mm-hmm. about your book, and you also talk about things that you have it separated into like things that are that you can prepare during the week in a busy, hectic schedule and still have great food, and things you can prepare on the weekends that sort of hold and really don't take a lot of time. Is that a goal for the book
to kind of just demystify everything, I mm-hmm. guess. You know, just make it, you know, for people who love to cook and enjoy cooking and who don't mind standing over a stove for a full day and just find it relaxing, mm-hmm. you know, there's elements in the book that appeal to them as well.
Right.
Everything is, once you understand the technique of things, it's relatively simple. And that's what I'm trying to get across.
Scott, I look at a lot of chefs' cookbooks, especially great chefs like you, and what I find in the cookbooks is they're built to show people how intricate their recipes are.
Yeah, to show off.
As opposed to making food that people can make. You know, their recipes are, okay, take the duck and put it in your duck press and squeeze the bones. You know, and
I think I don't have a duck press.
I'm going to look at the garage, honey, for the duck press that we got.
You know, and it just seems like so many of those recipe books are not built to have realistic recipes in it. And I don't mind, as a cook at home, being challenged a little bit with what I'm going to be making, but I do want the recipes to be realistic.
Absolutely. You know, we spent a lot of time, myself and my co-writer, Joanne Smart, really trying to figure out what it is that people want to cook at home, how much time they're going to dedicate to it, and then make the recipes accessible for everybody. So, you know, I understand that everybody wants, you know, I'm not an ego-driven person, so I don't want that ego to be in the book. I want the goodness of the, like I said before, it's about that pursuit of goodness. So I want people to be able to understand, and I understand that if it's easier, more people are going to do it.
Well, and also, I mean, when you have it, you're taking somebody who doesn't necessarily have all the traditions of cooking that they can do everything very easily. One of the things I thought was very interesting about Mark's mom, she'd be like, oh, you want some lunch? And it's like, bang, 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 and something amazing appears.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just has
14
the,
minutes later.
You're like, I can make this.
Four hours I was trying. I couldn't come close.
But if you buy a cookbook, very often you wind up, and you may turn out something great, but your kitchen's a disaster, and you spent 5.5 hours putting together these things that all need to come off just perfectly with the right time.
And you have to eat it cold.
And you can't get the coursing right. I think that what's really important about a book like this is that a lot of Americans eat so poorly because we just don't have time.
That's
and
right.
If you do have an hour, you don't have enough of a frame of reference to know what to do in an hour to get yourself some good food, so you order Chinese takeout.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That's one of the reasons I think that we're getting fat. And losing our appreciation.
It's one of the reasons I'm getting fat.
Good food. You own a 4-star restaurant, you idiot. Just have the chef cook you some food. I'm sorry.
I'm busy, and then the next thing you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and you're hungry.
The man has a kitchen staff that he pays, and he can't manage to get something good in the course of a day. So, but when you can make good food, and when you have these things in your repertoire, it's really... It's eating good food and eating flavorful food and concentrating on your food. There aren't a lot of fat people in Italy. There aren't a lot of fat people in France.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not compared to here. You know, we worry about the diet all the time. And, oh, I can't have this and I can't have that. Where the French are like, oh, well, we'll sit down and have a nice long meal.
Right.
Yeah,
and
a nice long meal, but they don't have portions, the size mm-hmm. of their head.
Right,
and
exactly.
And they don't eat at their desks.
That.
Almost never.
And I think it's about, you know, when you make good food like this and you have an appreciation.
Portions the size of their head. Very nicely put.
When you make good food like this and when you take the time to go and buy Scott Conant's book, which you can find on our website, we'll link you to how to buy it. That's restaurantguysradio.com. You can make good food at home and also with your kids. If you cook with your kids, my one nephew, Connell Miller, is. He just loves to cook. And that kid will grow up with an appreciation of food
sure.
For the rest of his life. And it's understanding where it comes from and understanding the chicken breasts don't come from a package in the supermarket. They come from a chicken.
Right, with no bones on them.
Right. They're trying to breed that, you know.
Listen, nothing wrong with that.
Did you know, actually, Scott, that they are trying to grow meat muscle now in a laboratory?
Maybe the most disgusting thing I've ever heard of.
This is a little disturbing.
It is.
We
scary.
Did a show on it. We did a show on it.
Very
and actually,
scary.
Really?
Yeah. And actually, the only problem. Are you ready for this, man? The only problem is they've got the meat. They take the cells and they replicate.
They can replicate the cells and make meat. They just can't exercise it.
Yeah, they can't get the texture right because they can't exercise it. But they're working on it.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Can you imagine?
I should have so much time on my hands.
No, you know that's getting into the chicken nugget sooner or later.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So how do you eat? Do you eat well?
I do a detox about 3 or 4 times a year, which I'm currently doing at the moment. I eat no sugar of any kind.
That's great.
And just to keep myself kind of youthful. My girlfriend will beat me up if I don't do it. More out of fear than anything.
And you, I read another amusing thing about you online when you had there was a bio on you somewhere and it said, Why you became a chef, and here's a quote from you. At my vocational high school, the plumbing class was full, so I took cooking, and I got really into it. Is that true?
It's a true story. Yeah.
Are you serious? You could have been Scott Conant, the world-famous plumber, if you had taken the...
Could you imagine?
No, actually,
I always say I just like to wear my pants that way. That's the motivation.
I enjoyed from the same article, your most memorable meal. You want to tell everybody what that was?
Oh, if you remember.
I don't remember.
You were at Le Cirque?
Oh, yeah. And what's his name? The
Chuck Mangione.
Chuck Mangione came over and played Happy Birthday to us and a little bit of that famous song that I'm not gonna.
I don't even remember the name of it.
That's all I know.
That's really beautiful.
That was magical. It was
you guys,
night.
Stay in the restaurant business. Hire the entertainment. Don't go on yourself. Hey, Scott, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy
schedule. Scott, it was great of you to be with us today.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much. And we're going to link everybody to your restaurants and your website, and they're all going to go there and say hello.
And Alto is awesome, by the way. Don't let anybody tell you different.
Awesome. Take care, Scott.
Cheers.
That was Scott Conant. He's the chef owner of L'Impero Restaurant in Manhattan, also Alto Restaurant in Manhattan, also the author of Scott Conant's New Italian Cooking. His restaurant, Alto, is very controversial, very important, and he has some serious ideas on Italian restaurants in America, and we support him 100%. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick and soon to be Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick. And if any of you out there know somebody's looking for a job, we're starting to hire our new staff. We need food and wine professionals of all sorts. We need people who are young and eager and, well, you don't need to be young, but you need to be eager and want to learn about food and wine. And you can go to stageleft.com or CatherineLombardi.com. Fill out an application or come down to see us in New Brunswick. I'm dead serious. We really want to hire some people.
You know what else we need, Francis?
What?
Tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
Hundreds and hundreds of pounds of tomatoes. We've been canning and jarring tomatoes to get ready for the opening of Catherine Lombardi. We're trying to use as many
locals
of our own tomatoes as we can, and we've discovered some very, very interesting things in this process.
Well, you know, we've been experimenting with putting up fruit for a couple of years now, mm-hmm. because we try to be local. We really do try to be local, and we can't always be local. We have good things from far away, but we always try to support our local farmers and to have great stuff, because some of the best food is in your own backyard, and quite literally in your mm-hmm. own backyard. And so what we have been doing for the last couple of years, we put up fruits and vegetables so that we are the strawberry jam we put up this year with the chef put up.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And we're going to use that in desserts in January.
It's unbelievably good. And it's from Indike Farms.
And strawberries season is very short. We picked mm-hmm. them ourselves. We sent our staff out to pick them, and we made this jam that's amazing.
Do you know right at this very minute that your staff is at Indike Farms picking harvesting San Marzano tomatoes and from Ben Conopacki at Indike Farms. They are literally, he's got about 500 pounds of tomatoes on vine right now.
For us.
We've been collecting tomatoes throughout the season, but it's getting late in the season now, so we're bringing in a lot of the tomatoes. And one of the things that people may not realize is San Marzanos and plums became kind of the popular tomato for making sauces and gravies out of.
And why is that, Mark?
In Italian cuisine. Well, it's for a number of reasons. One, it's got a higher flesh to liquid ratio.
Right. That Jersey tomato is really great to eat, but it's a little watery when you make it into the sauce.
But it's also got a little bit higher acidity. Those brandy wines really don't preserve very well. They're very
sweet to eat them fresh.
They make great fresh, to make a very fresh sauce, to make something a la minute, they're perfect. Exactly.
Like,
but to make something that you're putting up or make a long, slow-roasted sauce, they're not as good.
And this is more than just an advertisement for Catherine Lombardi, where you can have Jersey tomatoes well nigh unto December, but it's about what you should be doing at home and maybe looking into for next year. There's a great book, there's Recipes from Home, where you can find, which is a great cookbook you can find on our website as well, by our friends Barbara Shin and David Page, and they talk about canning and putting stuff up as well. Hey, listen, we'll talk to you tomorrow. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.